these past 15 months was nothing less than heroic and inspirational. Our hearts are with all of you. To lead us in a prayer for Senator Kennedy's peace and the strength of his loved ones, I invite Father Jerry Creedon to offer an invocation, after which the Boston Community Chorus will open the celebration by singing God Bless America, and I hope you will join them. Father Creedon.
Blessed are those who have eyes to see what you see, and ears to hear what you hear. The work goes on, the cause endures, the hope still lives, and the dream shall never die. He knew sleep and wakeful nights. He had his nightmares, and yet he dreamt. A dream that was dreamt in the heart, and only his great heart could hold. He gave flesh to that dream. In the noble house of his thought, where the sick were healed, the spear broken, and the stranger welcome. It is the age-old dream of the prophets, thy kingdom come. There will be a banquet yet, where the last will feast. He goes ahead of us to lay the table of generosity. It is a dream of joy, infallible sign of the presence of God, the laugh, the song of roses, the music. May flights of angels sing thee to thy rest.
great. It was
95, 95, 7, 7.
It was Senator Kennedy who suggested that when the time arrived, there'd be a gathering like this. And he selected as the venue this library, where politics and public service are honored every day in the name of his brothers. Thinking back upon other times, when we have felt the ache of emptiness, he was the one from whom we draw comfort and strength. And I suspect tonight will be no different. I have never met anyone whose spirits were not uplifted by being in the company of Ted Kennedy. And I hope you will feel that way once again when you leave his presence this evening. He wanted us to smile and be joyful as we remember and celebrate the depth of his faith, the quality of his character, the generosity of his heart, his love of his family and his friends, his patriotic service to his Commonwealth and country, and his countless contributions to the human spirit. For myself, I can say that Senator Kennedy was the most thoughtful, genuinely considerate human being I have ever known. He suffered from the constant pain of a shattered back, and he bore more hurt and heartache than most humans are ever asked to endure. But at every opportunity, he brought hope and joy and optimism to more people than we will ever know. Each of you have your own memories, but all of us would agree Ted Kennedy was fun. He loved to laugh, and he loved to make us laugh. He loved good music, and he loved to sing. Conducting the Boston Pops or the Harvard Band, leading the traditional July 4th or Thanksgiving Day sing-alongs with his friends and his family at his home on the Cape. And he loved to tell a good story. One of his favorites, which you no doubt have heard, went back to when he was 30 years old and made his first run for the Senate. And he was in a debate with his opponent, who questioned his qualifications and pointed his finger at him and said, "You never even had a full-time job." And the next morning at one of these plants at 6 a.m., he's out there greeting people, and this big iron worker comes up and puts out his hand. Says, "Kennedy, I heard what they said about you last night. You never worked a day in your life. Let me tell you something. You haven't missed a thing." He loved that story. He hosted annual dinners for his aging Harvard football buddies, swapping stories of the glory days. He'd laugh with that uproarious and unforgettable laugh and remind us, the older we get, the better we were. But painting a seascape, enjoying the affection of his faithful dog, Splash, sailing the Maya with family and friends. For those of us who were inspired by his unmatchable work ethic, to see him relax and enjoy the love of friends and family was our reward as well. To know Senator Kennedy well was to understand the quiet depth of the faith that guided him. He espoused the value of politics, but he practiced the politics of gospel values. He didn't preach about faith, but he was tireless in the practice of these tenets. The purpose of life is to live a life of purpose. Always be hopeful and make the most of every moment. Persevere and be strong, no matter the adversity. Be the best you can be at what you choose to do, and serve your neighbors with joy and love, and make a positive difference in their lives. During these last several months, Senator Kennedy was gratified, as we all were, to have seen the outpouring of thanks for a lifetime of inspirational service and of love for him as a human being. An honorary degree from Harvard, the knighthood from the government of Great Britain, the John F. Kennedy Profile and Courage Award, an outpouring of contributions to the Edward M. Kennedy Institute for the United States Senate, and the Presidential Medal of Freedom. And the list goes on. These honors are contemporary acknowledgments of what American history will ultimately record. That no individual legislator from any state, of either House of Congress, of any political party, worked harder or longer, with greater adherence to principle, or with more political courage for economic and social justice and for world peace than our own Edward M. Kennedy. He was the best at what he chose to do, and he left his indelible mark as the most accomplished and effective legislator in the history of this democracy. He believed and often said that America is a promise of our founding fathers passed on to each succeeding generation to fulfill. He chose politics as the means to fulfill his promise, reminding us that to whom much is given, much is expected. Gene Scheer gives voice to the life of selfless and patriotic service of our friend in these words of his hymn, American Anthem. All we've been given by those who came before, the dream of a nation whose freedom would endure. The work and prayers of centuries have brought us to this day. What shall be our legacy? What will our children say? Let them say of me, I was one who believed in sharing the blessings I received. Let me know in my heart, when my days are through, America, America, I gave my best to you. Be at peace, my friend. America will be in your debt forever. I knew you'd agree with me. Please join me in welcoming Senator Kennedy's nephew, the oldest son of Senator Robert Kennedy and Ethel Kennedy, former Congressman Joseph P. Kennedy.
You know, ladies and gentlemen, one of the ways that I think Senator Kennedy's life can be measured is the kind of people that he was able to surround himself with. Everyone who has been a part of this library knows that Teddy had one friend who stuck with him from the first day he ran until his last day in office. And that was the fellow who he selected to give that last talk. Let's just give Paul Kirk a big round of applause for the wonderful job that he does. You know, I just wanted to take a brief moment to thank each and every one of you for being here this evening. I wanted to thank you because every person in this audience was touched by Ted Kennedy in one way or another. All of you know the kind of person he was, what he stood for, and how he looked out after one very, very large family. But he could only do that, because of the kindness and generosity of his own family. And to Vicky, who in these last few days has shown a kind of grace and dignity and love and character that is simply beyond belief. And Vicky, I don't know where you are, but where is she? Thank you very much. And to Teddy and Kiki, who I love so much, and their whole family, little Teddy and Kylie, Cara with Max and Grace, and my good friend Patrick, who does such a terrific job following his father's footsteps. Patrick, thank you. And to Curran and Caroline, who have welcomed us as we have welcomed them. We just so appreciate the kindness and the love. You know, it's very difficult to share a father with as big a family as the Kennedys are. You know, every single one of my brothers and sisters needed a father. And we gained one through Uncle Teddy. Caroline and John were no different. The Smiths lost their father. The truth of the matter is that for so many of us, we just needed someone to hang on to. And Teddy was always there to hang on to. He had such a big heart, and he shared that heart with all of us. But Teddy and Patrick and Cara, we want to let you know that we understand how much you gave to allow us to be cared for. And you had to share. You had to share. So we just want to say thank you. We just want to say thank you to Teddy's entire family. But you know, every time I come to this library, I love to see the remembrances of my father and Uncle President Kennedy, and now we'll be able to come here and remember Teddy. But of all the exhibits and the different aspects of this library, the one that I most appreciate is one that we can't see right at the moment, but it's right around the corner, and it is the one thing outside of this building, and that is the Victura, which most of you know as a boat that President Kennedy owned. From my point of view, that was Teddy's boat. And if you ever knew how many races, because my father went out and bought me a boat, bought my mother a boat, which I kind of tried to grab, but nevertheless, that I was then supposed to go out and race against Teddy. Every single weekend, on Saturday and Sunday, I would see the butt end of that boat going over the horizon, and I'd be, you know, Teddy always came in first, second, or third. I like to think that I came in first, second, or third. The difference was I was third from the last, second from the last, or just dead last. You know, the truth is that I just wanted to share with you a little story that I thought just, to me, captured who Teddy is. So the reason that boat is out here in front of this library was the one time that I ever beat Teddy. We're on this race course in Hyannisport, and one of the crew says, "Hey, I actually think we're overtaking your uncle." And I went, "Oh my God, I can't believe it." So we got up next to him, and of course, the reason why we were catching him was because he was up to his belly button in water because the seams of the boat had opened up and the boat was sinking. So we finally passed Teddy, my one victory, and after the race, he came up to me and he said, "Listen, you don't have a boat, I don't have a boat. Maybe what we should do is get together and we'll buy a boat together. And then on one weekend, and one day of the weekend, I'll crew for you," which was going to be interesting, "and on the other day of the weekend, you crew for me." And the same was true for little Teddy and Patrick. So that was it. Me, Teddy, little Teddy, and Patrick. So off we go, and the boat starts to, we start to race this boat, you know, nonstop. And then we get to the biggest race of the year, and there's like 40 boats. And we get up that morning, and it is a full-blown gale. I mean, so there is, it is blowing like stink. And we get up there, and they call the race off, and then all the skippers get together, and they say, "Okay, well, we'll put the race back on." Now, the race starts so that we're going downwind, which means those big, colorful sails called a spinnaker are out in front. We start the race, and it's about 5 miles to the first mark. I thought something was a little strange when the only boat in the entire fleet that set a spinnaker was ours. And I thought, maybe they know something that we don't. And, well, anyway, we came to find it out. So we start down towards the first mark. And we are now ahead because we have this whole other sail. So we have this huge advantage. And we are ahead by a country mile. And I am so happy. I am the happiest guy in the history of sailboat racing. What I haven't bothered to tell Big Teddy, Little Teddy, or Patrick is that I can't steer the boat at all because that boat is going wherever the wind's going to take it. And I look out about 500 yards, and there is this, like, 15-foot-high bell buoy. And we are headed right for it. And then it's 200 yards. And then it's 100 yards, and Teddy looks around at me and goes, "Hey, don't you think we should turn a little bit?" "I'm trying." We hit that buoy. I mean, I thought we were all headed to Davy Jones's locker right there. And then they have this kind of screwy rule in sailboat racing where if you hit the buoy, you can go back and surround it three times. If you get around it three times without hitting it again, you can keep it going in a race. So now we have to sail back to the buoy with 40 boats coming at us that are none too pleased with us. There's a little bit of screaming, none going on our boat, of course. And we somehow make it through this fleet. We get around the mark three times, and now we're going to the second mark. And I feel like the biggest heel in the history of the world. I mean, there is no way, sorry, pal, but there was no way that I could blame this on anybody but myself. So I feel so terrible. And Big Teddy is up on the windward rail, and he's getting soaked, and it's not very pleasant right then. And, you know, he turned around to me, and he said, "Hey, Joe, if last night before we were going to bed, I told you we were going to round the first mark in seventh or eighth place, how would you have felt?" And I went, "Oh, I guess I would have felt pretty good." And he said, "Let's go win this race." And over the course of the next 3 hours, one after another, we picked off those boats, and we won the race. Now, I don't tell you that because I think winning that particular race was important, although I think Teddy would tell you it was important, because Teddy liked to win. But Teddy had this wonderful way about him where he could just sense in anyone when they needed a hand. He could just sense, and I can't tell you how many times in my life, and I'm sure as I look around and I see the people in this room who knew him so well, that every one of you doesn't have a story or two or three or five or ten of how Teddy came and gave you a helping hand when you were down. He was always there. And that's what it was. It was, he was telling me, never, ever, 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 ever give up. You stay in the race. And if people don't have health insurance, you stay in the race. If people don't have adequate health care, adequate housing, you stay in the race. If people aren't being treated properly, you stay in the race. And I saw that man make phone calls to every single family from this state that died on 9/11. I saw him make the phone calls to every single family in this state that lost a son or a daughter in the Iraq War, first or second, or in Afghanistan. This was a man who cared so deeply about those on the outside of political and economic power. People who struggle each and every day to just get by. He lived his whole life fighting for those people. And that's why I think when you hear all these tributes and you see Senator McCain and Orrin Hatch and others here today from the other side of the aisle, they're here because they knew what kind of individual Teddy was. They loved his laugh. They loved to spend time. But at its core, they loved to be with an individual who stood for something. And so, ladies and gentlemen, I'm here today because I love my uncle so very much, so very much. He did so much for me and my brothers and sisters and my mother when we needed a hand. And I tell you, ladies and gentlemen, there are thousands of others who lost a father or a mother or a sister or a brother or someone else in this life that turned to Ted Kennedy. We've lost such a human being. But you know, ladies and gentlemen, he is going to want us to continue. He's going to want us to live as he lived. He came back after so much tragedy because of that heart, because of that drive and that determination. So I ask each one of you to rededicate yourself to the same goals and ideals that Senator Ted Kennedy lived his life for, because he lived to make this world a better place. And our country and this world is a better place because of the life of Ted Kennedy. Thank you.
Get a chance to cheer again when we welcome Senator Kennedy's very good friend from the neighboring state of Connecticut, who served his state and country with honor and dignity, and we're glad he's back from his procedure, I'll call it. Welcome everybody's good friend, Senator Chris Dodd.
Well, good evening, all. And Vicki, let me begin by thanking you for the remarkable invitation to be here this evening and to stand at this podium and get a chance to express my feelings and my emotions about my dearest of friends, Ted Kennedy. Tonight, of course, we gather to celebrate the incredible American story of a man who made so many other American stories possible, my friend Teddy. And unlike his beloved brothers, Sister Kathleen, his nephews, Teddy was granted the gift of time. He lived, and the Irish poet suggested, as he suggested, not just to comb gray hair, but white hair. And if you look at what he achieved in his 77 years, it seems at times as if he lived for centuries. Generations of historians will, of course, chronicle his prolific efforts on behalf of so many others around the world. I will leave that to them. Tonight, I just want to share a few thoughts about my friend. And what a friend he has been. A friend of unbridled sympathy and empathy, of optimism, and of full-throated joy. Examples, of course, of that friendship are legion. I remember many years ago, a close friend of mine passed away. Teddy didn't know him at all. I was asked to say a few words at that funeral. As long as I live, I'll never forget that as I stood at that pulpit and looked out over that gathering that day, there was Teddy sitting in the back of that church. He obviously wasn't there for my friend. He was there for me at my time of loss. That was what it was like to have Teddy in your corner. When our daughters Grace and Christina were born, the very first call I received was from my friend Teddy. When I lost the Iowa caucuses last year, not that anyone ever thought I was going to win them, the first call I received was from Teddy and Vicky. When my sister passed away last month, the first call I received was from Teddy, even though he was well into the final summer of his own life. And 2 weeks ago, as I was coming out of surgery, I got a call from Teddy. His unique voice, as loud and booming as ever. "Well," he roared, "between going through prostate cancer surgery and doing town hall meetings, you made a great choice," he said. And though he was dying, of course, and I was hurting, believe me, he had me howling with laughter in the recovery room as he made a few choice comments I cannot repeat this evening about catheters. As we all know, of course, Teddy had a ferocious sense of humor. In 1994, he was in the political fight of his life against Mitt Romney. Before the first debate, held in Boston's, of course, historic Faneuil Hall, I was with Teddy and Vicky that evening and his team, and along with everyone else, we were offering our advice before the debate began. "Teddy," I cautioned, "we Irish always talk too fast. Even if you know the answer to a question, you have to pause, slow down, and at very least appear to be thoughtful." Well, out he went. And of course, the very first question was something like this. "Senator, you've served the Commonwealth of Massachusetts for nearly 35 years in the United States Senate. Explain then why this race is so close." Teddy paused. And paused. And paused. 5 seconds. 10 seconds. Finally, after what seemed like an eternity, he answered the question. After the debate, I said, "Good Lord, Teddy, I didn't mean pause that long after the first question. What in the world were you thinking of?" He looked at me, and I'll never forget it, and replied, he said, "I was thinking, that's a damn good question. Why is this race so close?" Well, in these last months of his life, I've just so treasured our conversations. At 6:30 a.m., in the morning of July 16th, only a few weeks ago, the morning after his Senate Health Care Committee finished 5 weeks of exhausting work on a bill that he had written, by the way, and that I believe will be one of the greatest of his many legacies My phone rang in the morning. There was Teddy, beyond ecstatic that we had finished our work and that his committee had been the first to report a bill, always the competitor, of course. Teddy was never maudlin during these last number of months or self-pitying about his health and his condition. But he was always fully aware of what was happening to him. Every Irishman's dream, of course, is to attend our own eulogies. That's why we call the obituary page the Irish sports page, for those of you not familiar. And I know he enjoyed a uniquely Celtic kick out of hearing people who abhorred his politics say incredibly nice things about him along the way. Volumes, of course, will be published by those attempting to unlock the mystery of why Teddy was such an effective legislator over the years. Was it his knowledge of parliamentary procedure? Was it his political instincts? His passionate oratory? His staff? What was it? Please let me save the pundits and the political scientists some time and all of you some money and tell you what Teddy's secret was. People liked him. Now, he always had a great staff. He always had a great staff and great ideas. But that only counts for so much in the United States Senate if you lack the respect and admiration of your colleagues. And Teddy earned that respect. You'll recall he arrived in Washington as the 30-year-old brother of a sitting United States president and the Attorney General of the United States. Many people drew their conclusions about him before he spoke his first words in the United States Senate. And over the years, of course, he became a target of partisans who caricatured him as a dangerous liberal. Now, liberal he was, and very, very proud of it, I might add. But once you got to know him, as his colleagues did in the Senate, you quickly learned Teddy was no caricature. He was a warm, passionate, thoughtful, tremendously funny man who loved his country deeply and loved the United States Senate. If you ever needed to find Teddy in the Senate chamber, all you had to do was to listen for that distinctive thunderclap of a laugh echoing across the hallowed halls as he charmed his colleagues. He served in the Senate, as all of you know, for almost half a century, alongside liberals and conservatives, Democrats and Republicans. And he befriended, as I said, all of those with equal gusto. It's, of course, great to see his friends, Senator Orrin Hatch and John McCain, here this evening. It is to their, of course, credit that they so often supported Teddy's efforts. And I say in some jest, it is to Teddy's great credit that he rarely supported theirs on the efforts. But Teddy's personal friendships with Orrin and John and so many others over this half century weren't simply the polite working relationships that make possible a politics in our country. They are the very real and lasting bonds that make the United States Senate of our nation work. That's what made Teddy one of our greatest senators ever. Some people born with a famous name live off it. Others enrich theirs. Teddy enriched his. And as we begin the task of summing up all that he has done for our nation and so many others around the world, perhaps we can begin by acknowledging this. John Fitzgerald Kennedy inspired our America. Robert Kennedy challenged our America. And our Teddy changed America. Nearly every important law passed in the last half century bears his mark, and a great many of them, of course, bear his name. Teddy was defined by his love of our country, the passion for public service, his abiding faith, and of course, as Joe has said, his family. His much-adored Vicky, his children, Cara, Teddy, and Patrick, Caroline, and Curran, his grandchildren, nieces, and nephews. All of you need to know, when you weren't around and I was, how often he talked about you and how much pleasure and joy, the unbounded joy and pleasure that you brought to him. Teddy, of course, was a man who lived for others, as Joe has pointed out. He was a champion for countless people who otherwise might not have had one. And he never quit on them, never gave up on the belief that we could make tomorrow a better day, never once. Last August in Denver, 1 year to the day before his passing, Teddy spoke at our national convention. His gait, of course, was shaky, but his blue eyes were clear and his unmistakable voice rang with strength. As he passed the torch to another young president, Teddy said, "The work begins anew. The hope rises again, and the dream lives on." He spoke of the great fight of his life, ensuring that every American, regardless of their economic status, be granted the right to decent health care in our country. We're all so deeply saddened that he did not live to see that battle won. But in a few short days from now, we will return to our work in Teddy's Senate. The blistering days of August will be replaced, I pray, by the cooler days of September. And we will prevail in a way Teddy won so many victories for our nation, by listening to each other, by respecting each other, and the seriousness of the institution to which we belong, and where Teddy earned an immortal place in American history. And as he so eloquently eulogized his brother Bobby 40 years ago, Teddy doesn't need to be enlarged in death beyond what he was in life. We'll remember him for the largeness of his spirit, the depth of his compassion, his persistence in the face of adversity, and the breadth of his achievements. We'll remember him as a man who understood better than most that America is a place of incredible opportunity, of incredible hope, and a place of redemption. He labored tirelessly to make those dreams a reality for everyone. Those dreams, the ones he spoke of throughout his life, live on like the eternal flame that marks President Kennedy's grave, that very flame that Teddy and Bobby lit 46 years ago. And in all the years that I've known and loved this man, that eternal flame has never failed but to burn brightly in Teddy's eyes. And now, as he rejoins his brothers on that hillside in Arlington, may the light from that flame continue to illuminate our path forward. And with the work of our own hand and the help of Almighty God, inspired by Teddy's example, may we lift up this nation of ours that my friend Teddy loved so much. And I thank you. Thank you.
Senator Dodd said, "Senator Kennedy had good staff. An alumnus of his staff who worked tirelessly on the health issue while he was there and is now a distinguished attorney in the city of Boston is Nick Littlefield. And in just a moment, you'll learn more about Nick's other talents. But welcome him now, Nick, to the podium."
So I think that for the senator, one of my most important attributes as staff director for the Labor and Human Resources Committee was that I could sing. And you all know that he loved to sing, of course, and Vicky and he and family members and pianists that they invited in always participated in these magnificent sing-alongs. And I got to sing with the senator in so many different places over so many years. I think of Washington and Boston and the Senate and the Cape and Maine and Always on the Maya we sang. Those were magnificent times. You know, he even had me sing to Senator Hatch as they were wrapping up the deal on children's health. That was the senator at his best. I learned that Senator Kennedy liked the songs that he knew best. So we sang On the Street Where You Live dozens of times. And Sweet Adeline was a close second. And when we sang to a crowd, both of us, if I got too loud, he'd give me that look, and I'd know I was in trouble. Tonight I'm going to sing one of the songs he especially loved, and which we always sang every single evening when we got together to sing. And we sang this song even the last time I saw him. And I think he loved this song. I know he loved this song because it said so much about him and Vicky. If I could have an E. Love, love changes everything, hands and faces, earth and sky. Love, love changes everything, how you live and how you die. Love can make the summer fly, or a night seem like a lifetime. Yes, love, love changes everything. How I tremble at her name. Nothing in the world will ever be the same. Love, love changes everything. Days are longer, words mean more. Love, love changes everything. Pain is deeper than before. Love can turn your world around, and that world will last forever. Yes, love, love changes everything, brings you glory, brings you shame. Nothing in the world will ever be the same. Off into the world we go, planning futures, shaping years. Love comes in and suddenly all our wisdom disappears. Love makes fools of everyone. All the rules we make are broken. Yes, love, love changes everything. Live or perish in its flame. Nothing in the world will ever be the same.
Don't go away, Nick. We're going to get you back before too long. What a gift. Our next speaker is the Chief Executive Officer of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Please join me in welcoming Governor Deval Patrick.
Good evening, family and friends. Like a lot of people, some of you, I suspect, I knew Ted Kennedy before I ever met him. I knew him from the grainy black and white TV images of Camelot when my mother used to say to no one in particular, I love me some Kennedy. I knew him from the moving speeches, the eulogy of his brother Robert or the Democratic Convention speech in 1980. I got occasional sightings of him as I got older, like when he entered my high school graduation with the rest of the family when his niece and my classmate, Courtney, was graduating, or at Senate Judiciary Committee hearings when important civil rights laws were under review and I was working as a young staff lawyer at the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. But the first time I actually met him was in 1993 when I was a finalist for the United States Attorney position in Boston. All three finalists were invited to Washington for a final interview with the senator, and I was nervous. He was already long an icon by then, a legend of progressive politics. We met in his famous Capitol hideaway, just the two of us, and before we got going good, I said to him that whatever the outcome of the selection process, I wanted him to know that I knew that my path from the south side of Chicago to that interview was paved in large measure by his life's work, and that I was grateful for that. Now, I have to say that in addition to being true and heartfelt, it was not a bad interview opener. But I still didn't get the job. And though he made a great choice, he felt awkward about letting me down. I know that because the next time I met him unexpectedly at a party on Nantucket the following summer, he blanched at first when he saw me and sent Vicky across the lawn just to make sure the coast was clear before he came over to say hello. For our time, he was a master of the Senate. When President Clinton sent my name to the Senate for a senior post in the Justice Department, Ted took charge of the confirmation process in the way only a master could. The morning after the nomination was announced, he had me up to the Capitol and he positioned me in the Vice President's ceremonial office just off the Senate floor. There was an early morning vote, and as senators came off the floor, he steered colleagues one by one into that office so that they could shake my hand. His theory was, it's hard to demagogue someone you've actually looked in the eye and met. I met probably 60 senators coming off the floor after that vote, including most of the members of the Judiciary Committee. And we had more than a few laughs later about my first impressions of his colleagues and his more studied ones. For example, the importance of just smiling and nodding when speaking with Senator Howell Heflin of Alabama, even though it was often sometimes, or at least sometimes, impossible to understand just what he was saying, or how not to worry about follow-up questions during the confirmation hearings from Senator Strom Thurmond, because he couldn't hear your answer to the first question that he had asked you. His observations were never harsh or sarcastic. He was never mean. He was a master of the Senate not just because he knew his colleagues' foibles, but because he so clearly respected their humanity. He knew their politics, yes, but he also knew them. Of course, he was a ham. He loved to sing, as Nick was just saying. Two summers ago, Ted and Vicky came out to Tanglewood for a Boston Pops concert of Broadway show tunes. The concert featured the famed Broadway ingenue Marin Mazzie, and Tony Award-winning baritone Brian Stokes Mitchell, whom we hear from tonight. Now, this is significant because Stokes is what Ted thought he sounded like when he sang. Diane and I invited Ted and Vicky for dinner at our house after the concert. And about a week before, Ted called to say that he was bringing Pops conductor Keith Lockhart and his then-fiancée as well. Great. A few days later, he called again to say that he was inviting Marin and Stokes for dinner as well. Delighted. But Vicky was horrified. She kept apologizing for Teddy inviting all of these add-ons, as she said, right up until we all sat down to dinner, when another total stranger walked into the house. Vicky and I looked at each other, assuming we had to set another unexpected place at the table. Instead, our mystery guest started to set up a keyboard because Teddy had also invited the pianist from the Boston Pops so that we could have proper accompaniment after dinner. And we sang every show tune we knew until the wee hours of the morning. And that was the thing about Ted. He was in the same instant, larger than life and completely down to earth. His record of achievement and contribution is unrivaled in the United States Senate. His humanity, his compassion, his kindness, in some ways had just as great an impact. A friend of mine told me recently the story of Ted's plans to attend the funeral of Yitzhak Rabin, the late Prime Minister of Israel. The day before he left for Jerusalem, he called the White House and asked if it would be appropriate to bring some soil from Arlington Cemetery. No one knew the answer. So that day, he went to the graves of his two brothers and scooped up some soil. He carried that precious commodity in a shopping bag to the funeral of Rabin. And after the ceremonies, after the crowd had dispersed, away from the cameras and the press, he carefully, respectfully, lovingly spread that soil on Rabin's grave. No publicity, just a good man doing a sweet thing. Everyone in this room has some quiet, private example of his or her own. And what's even more powerful is to think how many thousands more, many of them lining the motorcade yesterday or filing in through the doors of this library over the course of the last 2 days to pay their respects or signing condolence messages around the world, who have private, quiet examples of their own. No politician ever made me feel more that public life could be a noble calling, or better about who I was and where I came from. He loved the Commonwealth and this country. He loved the American people. But he also believed that we could be better. And it was that vision of a better America that he went to work for every day. And millions of veterans and working people and women and people with disabilities and racial and ethnic minorities, millions of pragmatic idealists who want to believe that they can make the world better through public service are in his debt. So many I've heard in the last couple of days are asking how best to honor his legacy. I say we should live it. His legacy is to me about what we do in our own lives and communities to keep the dream alive, to make a great country even better. It won't be easy, especially with the profound sadness we feel today that our standard bearer has been taken from us. But it never was, even for our dear lost friend. Ted Kennedy sailed more often than not into the political wind in search of that better America. And he did it with skill and a grace so typical of him and his family. Let us honor his life and accomplishments by making his work our own. God bless you, Vicky, and all the family. Thank you.
Thank you, Governor. The last time our next speaker was on the stage. He received the John F. Kennedy Profile and Courage Award. A distinguished American, a distinguished United States Senator from the state of Arizona, please welcome John McCain.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you. As Paul mentioned, I was last in this wonderful library. It was 10 years ago when Russ Feingold and I were honored to receive the Profile of Courage Award. Ted was very gracious to my family on that occasion. It was my son Jimmy's 11th birthday, and Ted went out of his way to make sure it was celebrated enthusiastically. He arranged a ride for us on a Coast Guard cutter, two birthday cakes, and led a rousing rendition of Happy Birthday with that booming baritone of his drowning out all other voices, as it often did on the Senate floor. He was good company, my friend Ted. He had the Irish talent for storytelling and for friendship. At the lunch he hosted for us in the family quarters on the top floor of the library, he recalled an earlier episode in our friendship, a story he delighted in retelling. It occurred on the Senate floor when two freshman senators, one a Democrat and the other a Republican, neither of whom would remain long in the Senate, were getting a little personal with each other as they debated an issue, which must have seemed important at the time, but which neither Ted nor I were paying much attention to. We both happened to be on the floor at the same time, and the heat of our colleagues' exchange eventually managed to get our attention. You might just think that two more senior members of the Senate would, in such a situation, counsel two junior members to observe the courtesies and comedy which theoretically are supposed to distinguish our debates. But Ted and I shared the sentiment that a fight not joined was a fight not enjoyed. And irresistibly, we were both drawn into a debate we had no particular interest in, but which suddenly looked like fun. I struck first, castigating the young Democratic senator for abusing my Republican colleague. Before she could respond for herself, Ted rode valiantly to her rescue. And within minutes, he and I had forgotten why we were there and what the debate was all about. We'd probably even forgotten the names of our two colleagues. As one of us spoke, the other would circle the floor, agitated and anxious to fire back. After a while, we must have thought the distance between our desks too great for either of us to hear each other clearly, or that the pressure of the clerk transcribing our exchange had become too distracting. And as if we both had heard some secret signal, we put down our microphones simultaneously and walked briskly to the well of the floor where we could continue in closer quarters and in language perhaps too familiar to be recorded for posterity, which regrettably was still audible enough to be overheard by a few reporters who are now leaning over the railing of the press gallery trying to ascertain just what the hell was going on between McCain and Kennedy. After we both were satisfied and had sufficiently impressed upon each other the particulars of proper senatorial comportment, we ended our discussion and returned to the business that had brought us to the chamber in the first place. And I'm happy to report we succeeded in discouraging our colleagues from continuing their intemperate argument. They both had deserted the chamber, with, I was later told, for I didn't notice their escape, rather puzzled, if not frightened, looks on their faces. When I next saw Ted ambling down a Senate corridor, he was bellowing laughter, that infectious laugh of his that could wake the dead and cheer up the most beleaguered soul. He was good company, excellent company. I think I'm going to miss him more than I can say. We disagreed on most issues, but I admired his passion for his convictions, his patience with the hard and sometimes dull work of legislating, and his uncanny sense for when differences could be bridged and his cause advanced by degrees. He was a fierce advocate, and no senator would oppose him in a debate without at least a little trepidation, often more than a little. We all listened to him, of course. He was hard to ignore. When we agreed on an issue and worked together to make a little progress for the country on an important issue, he was the best ally you could have. You never had even a small doubt that once his word was given and a course of action decided, he would honor the letter and the spirit of the agreement. When we worked together on the immigration issue, we had a daily morning meeting with other interested senators. He and I would meet for a few minutes in advance and decide between us which members of our respective caucuses needed a little special encouragement or, on occasion, a little straight talk. If a member tried to back out of a previous commitment, Ted made certain they understood the consequences of their action. It didn't matter to him that the offender was a member of his own caucus. He was the most reliable, the most prepared, and the most persistent member of the Senate. He took the long view. He never gave up. And though on most issues I very much wished he would give up, he taught me to be a better senator. After Labor Day, I'll go back to the Senate, and I'll try to be as persistent as Ted was and as passionate for the work. I know I'm privileged to serve there, but I think most of my colleagues would agree the place won't be the same without him.
Next, you'll have the joy and the privilege of viewing a video tribute to Senator Kennedy, directed by Ken Burns and Mark Herzog. You've heard other people speaking tonight. Tonight, you'll hear about the life of Ted Kennedy in his own words.
The sea, for me, has always been a metaphor of life. I mean, the sea is a constantly evolving, changing, shifting aspect of both nature and of life. That sort of exposure to the sea is both enriching and enhancing, and it's fun.
The sea, the wind, the outdoors, it is the most renewing, healing place for him, and always has been.
Oh, that's a good job.
Yeah?
Sweated a little bit.
He loves getting out and sailing. I think he's never more at peace, and perhaps in some ways never more in touch with his family and his roots and his brothers than when he's out there sailing.
I grew up in a family that wanted to achieve in the sense of making a difference in people's lives.
I know that Ted Kennedy has always been unbelievably sensitive to the accomplishments of his brothers. They were his inspiration.
He has a legacy. He's done his very best to pick up where his two brothers left off.
Like my three brothers before me, I pick up a fallen standard, sustained by their memory of our priceless years together. I shall try to carry forward that special commitment to justice, to excellence, to courage that distinguished their lives.
He championed the cause of those who have been left out, the poor, the elderly, our children, those without education.
Was brought up to believe that, you know, to those to whom much is given, much is required. But it's really bigger than that. He really feels a moral obligation to do everything possible to make this world a better place.
I've heard Senator Kennedy say on many occasions that health care is not a privilege. It is a right.
As long as I have a voice in the United States Senate,
It's going to be for that democratic platform plank that provides decent quality of health care.
Because of Ted Kennedy, people have things today, they're able to do things today, they're able to reach for the American dream in ways that they never imagined.
I first met the senator at something called Children's Congress through the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation, and he asked me to come to testify in front of Congress about stem cell research and the support for that. If I could help someone almost as much as Senator Kennedy's helped me, then I'd be a very happy person.
City Year has given the opportunity for the best of our young people to serve in the community.
He deeply believes that national service ought to be part of the everyday life of every single American.
He committed right away to introduce new legislation to take programs like City Year to scale, to make it possible for young people all over our country to serve our country.
He deeply believes in service. Even as a United States Senator, he's read every Tuesday at a local school in Washington, D.C. as part of an Everybody Wins program.
We were signing up for this reading program, and I was assigned to read with Senator Kennedy as my reading partner. It gave me someone to want to do well for and make proud. I'm going to Virginia Commonwealth University in Richmond, and I'll be majoring in education.
We're talking about a man of incredible sensitivity. He has always been there for the troops. He's always been there understanding the sacrifices that those troops made. He's been there for their families.
We met Senator Kennedy for the first time in November 2003 when we buried our son John at Arlington National Cemetery.
Their son was lost because his Humvee was not up armored, and they've really dedicated their lives to making sure that other young men and women don't suffer the same fate.
John died just after his 20th birthday. Senator Kennedy agreed to call hearings. Within 6 months of those hearings, all troops in Iraq had body armor. And to that, I owe the senator.
Brian and his wife, Alma, turned that enormous personal tragedy into a remarkable force for change.
Senator Kennedy had been a Gold Star family before I was born. He remembers where his mother was, where his father was, when they came to tell him his brother Joseph was killed. We share a wound that doesn't heal. And in a deep and abiding love for this country. And Senator Kennedy taught me that government can function for the common man.
His patriotism, his family, his faith, really, those three things are just intrinsic to who he is. You know, I think of him as this guy who's got really, really big shoulders, and he's strong for all of us, and he's funny, and he sort of leads the way. He's the Pied Piper in our family.
How many sails are up?
Well, let's count them. What do we call the one that's way, way, way up at the tipping
point? What's that? The Halyard, isn't it? Oh, no, the fisherman.
Fisherman!
Don't tell me you want to put the fisherman on the other side now, Dad.
In the year I was born, President Kennedy let out word that the torch had been passed to a new generation of Americans. He was right, it had. It was passed to his youngest brother. From the battles of the 1960s to the battles of today, he has carried that torch, lighting the way for all who share his American ideals.
I see the day when President Barack Obama and Ted Kennedy will be moving progressive legislation through the Congress to help some of the most vulnerable people in our society.
We'll break the old gridlock and finally make health care what it should be in America, a fundamental right for all, not just an expensive privilege for the few.
The people in this country are going to respond in a hopeful and positive way. It's going to be a very, very dramatic and important alteration and change, and it's one that I'm looking forward to being part of.
We're all set now.
Woo-hoo! Woo-hoo!
What a treat. I now have the privilege of welcoming a friend and colleague of Senator Kennedy's, and now senior senator of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, John Kerry.
Vicki, and Teddy, Kiki, Cara, Patrick, Curran, Caroline, thank you for the privilege of sharing some words here today about my friend and my colleague of a quarter of a century. From the moment of fateful diagnosis 14 months ago until he left us, we saw grace and courage, dignity and humility, joy and laughter, and so much love and gratitude lived out on a daily basis that our cup does run over. How devastating the prognosis was as Ted left MGH with his family, waving to all, June a year ago. And that he lived the next 14 months in the way that he did, optimistic, full of hope, striving and accomplishing still. That he did that is in part a miracle, yes, but it's equally a triumph of the love and the care that Vicki, their children, and all who cherished him gave him in such abundance. In many ways, I think it's fair to say that this time, these last months, were a gift to all of us. The last months of his life were in many ways the sweetest of seasons because he saw how much we love him, how much we respect him, and how unbelievably grateful we are for his stunning years of service and friendship. And what a year he had, my friends. He accomplished more in that span of time than many senators do in a lifetime. Mental health parity, the Tobacco Act, a health care bill out of his committee. He spoke at the Democratic Convention. He wrote his memoirs. And he was there for the signing of the Edward M. Kennedy Service America Act and received the Medal of Freedom from the President and a knighthood from the Queen of England. I think many of you who were there would agree with me that perhaps one of the most poignant moments of all was when he was awarded an honorary degree from Harvard. His staff, through the years, was gathered in the front, and friends and family and admirers were scattered throughout the audience and filled the room, and Vice President-elect Biden was there. And you have no idea how hard Ted practiced and worked to be able to do that in the convention and his appearance at the White House, to make a speech that lived up to his high standards. He took the stage at Harvard, and for a few moments, we all worried that it would be difficult to pull off. And then, before you know it, his voice began to soar, and the pace picked up, and he inspired again with a stunning restatement of his purpose in public life. When it was over, the applause never wanted to end. He stayed on the stage, reaching out to us and we to him, and we wanted him to stay there forever. I first met Ted Kennedy when I was 18 years old as a volunteer for his first Senate campaign in the summer before I went to college. Then I met him again when I returned from Vietnam and we veterans encamped on the Mall in Washington. It was Ted Kennedy who had the courage to come down to the Mall one night and in a tent listen to us talk about Vietnam. We were controversial, but Ted broke the barriers and other senators followed. He worked his heart out for me in the presidential race of 2004, and he made the difference in Iowa. When we were down in the polls and I was slugging it out there, Ted brought his humor, his energy, and his eloquence to Davenport to help melt the snows of that state. There we were just 2 weeks before the caucuses, and his voice boomed out in this room, "You voted for my brother. You voted for my other brother. You didn't vote for me." And as the crowd roared with laughter, Ted bellowed, "But we're back here for John Kerry, and if you vote for John Kerry, I'll forgive you." "You can have 3 out of 4, he said. "And I'll love you, and I'll love Iowa." And let me tell you, Iowa loved him. We had a lot of fun there. He would open an event, and he'd come out, and he'd say, "I want to talk to you about a bold, handsome, intelligent leader, a man who should not only be president, but who should end up on Mount Rushmore. But enough about me. Now I'll talk about John Kerry." After that agonizing Tuesday night in November, when we fell so short in one state, there were Ted and Vicky on a Wednesday morning, sitting with Therese and me in the kitchen in Boston as we prepared to concede. He was always there when you needed him. And so were Sonny and Splash, incidentally, when you didn't. Once, when we were at a Senate retreat, Ted had just spoken, and then Joe Biden got up to make a point and rejoined her. And as Joe got more forceful in his argument, he started to gesture, and he took a step towards Ted. Boom! Sonny and Splash were up on their feet, barking wildly, defending Kennedy territory with a vengeance. And ladies and gentlemen, for the first time in history, we witnessed a Biden rhetorical retreat. And I have to tell you, one of my really favorite moments was Ted campaigning with my daughter Vanessa, who is here, campaigning in New Mexico. They were visiting an Indian reservation, and the tribal medicine man wanted to bestow a blessing. He took a feather, and he chanted, and he asked that Ted and Vanessa stand side by side and extend their hands and bow their heads. And with a sacred feather, he touched their feet, and he touched their foreheads, and he touched their hands, all the while chanting away. And when he finished, Ted leaned over to Vanessa and whispered, "I think we just got married." Well, you can imagine. Now, a couple of months later, she got a note from Teddy which said, "No matter what happens, we will always have New Mexico." One of the framed notes in Ted's Senate office was a thank you from a colleague for a gift, a special edition of Profiles in Courage. This is what it said. "I brought it home and reread it. What an inspiration. Thank you, my friend, for your many courtesies. If the world only knew." It was signed by Trent Lott, the Republican leader of the Senate. Indeed, if everyone only knew. When George Wallace was wounded in an assassination attempt, the first to visit him was Ted Kennedy. When Joe Biden underwent brain surgery for an aneurysm, the first to board the train to Wilmington was Ted Kennedy. When Jesse Helms announced that he had to undergo heart valve surgery, Helms told his constituents back in North Carolina, "It's no piece of cake, but it sure beats listening to Ted Kennedy on the Senate floor." So Ted wrote a note to Jesse saying, "I'd be happy to send you tapes of my recent Senate speeches if that will help your speedy recovery." And just 2 weeks ago, when I was in the hospital after hip surgery, just like Chris Dodd, there was Ted Kennedy on the phone asking how I was doing with all that he was dealing with. In his life, as we all know, Ted knew the dark night of loss. And I think that's why his empathy was global and deeply personal. After my father died of cancer just days before the convention in 2000, there was a knock at the door, completely unexpected, And standing there on the front porch was Ted Kennedy, dropping by to hug and talk and just to pass time with us. For 25 years, I was privileged to work by his side, learning from the master. And over the years, I've received hundreds of handwritten notes from Ted, some funny, some touching, a few correcting me, all of them special treasures now. He thanked me for my gift of a Catholic study Bible, commenting, "My mother would be very grateful to you for keeping me in line." He thanked me for a particularly challenging charter lift home after 9/11 when it was hard to get anything in the air. And he wrote, "Here's a riddle for you. What do you get when you make 3 calls to the FAA, 2 calls to the Secretary of Transportation, and 3 calls to Signature Flight Support? You get a great trip to Boston." His way of saying thank you. And he thanked Teresa and me for the gift of the vintage bottle, concluding, "I just hope that I've aged as well as this wine." The personal touch Ted brought to life extended, we know, well beyond the Senate colleagues. It reflected the kind of man that he was and the kind of laws that he wrote. For 1,000 days in the White House, as Chris Dodd mentioned, President Kennedy inspired. For 80 days on the presidential campaign trail, Robert Kennedy gave us reason to believe and hope again. And for more than 17,000 days as a United States Senator, Ted Kennedy changed the course of history as few others have. Without him, there might still be a military draft. The war in Vietnam might have lasted longer. There might have been delays in granting the Voting Rights Act or in passing Medicare or Medicaid. Soviet Jewish refuseniks might have been ignored, and who would have been there to help them as Ted did? Without him, we might not have stood up against apartheid as forcefully as we did, and the barriers to fair immigration might still be higher today, if everyone only knew. Without Ted, 18-year-olds might not be able to vote. There might not be a Martin Luther King Day, Meals on Wheels, student loans, increases in the minimum wage, equal funding for women's college sports, health insurance, the Family Medical Leave Act, the Americans with Disabilities Act, workplace safety, AmeriCorps, children's health insurance, if everyone only knew. He stood against judges who would turn back the clock on constitutional rights. He stood against the war in Iraq, his proudest vote. And for nearly 4 decades and all through his final days, he labored with all of his might to make health care a right for all Americans, and we will do that in his honor. In these last months, every visit Ted made to the Senate elicited an unstoppable outpouring of affection. Tears welled up in the eyes of Republicans and Democrats. Everyone missed his skills, his booming call to arms and conscience. On his last visit, Chris Dodd and I sat in the back row beside his desk and listened to Teddy regale us with an imitation of his efforts to practice throwing out a ball for the Red Sox opening game. He laughed and he poked fun at how reluctant his hand and muscles were to obey his commands. I was in awe of this moment of humility and self-deprecating humor in the face of genuine frustration. And as he so often said over the years, we have to take issues seriously, but never take ourselves too seriously. He was a master of that too, and one of the great lessons that he taught me. In the end, his abiding gift was his incomparable love of life and his commitment to make better the life of the world. In between his time changing the world, he found time to capture it in marvelous paintings. He was a talented, gifted artist, and as we know, an incurable romantic. Who else would have thought to hide their engagement ring on a coral reef in St. Croix as they were swimming and diving so Vicky could find it? It never occurred to him
that the waters might wash the ring away. But one thing certain, their love endured from then until now, and it will endure forever. Massachusetts has always had its own glorious love affair with the sea. Like his brothers before him, salt water was in his veins. Teddy lived by the sea, and he lived joyously on it. The evening he passed away, I looked out at the ocean where gray sky met gray water. No horizon, the sky almost seemed to be in mourning. It was not a time for sailing. But the next afternoon, as I sat at his home, I looked out at a perfect Nantucket Sound, and I thought to myself with certainty, he's on a schooner now. He's sailing. Jack, Joe, Bobby on the foredeck, Rosemary, Eunice, Kathleen, Pat, trading stories with their parents, and Teddy at the helm, steering his steady course. Sail on, my friend. Sail on.
The next speaker is one you've seen Senator Kennedy's name and then the name of his colleagues. Another great American who sat across the aisle and has served our country well in the United States Senate. Please welcome Senator Orrin Hatch.
This is a tremendous honor to be in this wonderful city and this state where our revolution was begun. I'm just so grateful to be here. Vicki.